Today, we continue our walk through the Gospel of Mark, where we're looking at Jesus and who he is. And today, we're in chapter 6. Back in chapter 4, in the calm after the terrible storm on the lake, you may remember, Jesus and the disciples are on the fishing boat. And Jesus has told the winds and the waves to stop, and they did. And now the disciples have a question, and it's not, who is this? The question is, who is this? Who is he? And that question is left unanswered, and it won't be until chapter 6 that we get the disciples starting to answer this who is Jesus question for themselves. And when I was thinking about those 12 disciples on the lake, I thought about how half of them were fishermen. They were used to being on the lake. It was their lake. And I thought about how Jesus is not interested in a long-term relationship, a long-distance relationship with us. He doesn't want us to set up a Zoom meeting. By his Spirit, Jesus comes right into our lives, into our places and spaces, just like he did with those fishermen disciples. So whether we're in the classroom, or we're at work, or at home, or in the car, or wherever, Jesus is interested in being right there with us, right in the ordinary, in the everyday, in the mundane of our lives. And sometimes he might very well astonish us there. So if you haven't already, I'd say let him in, invite him in, and see what happens. So, chapter 6. There's a lot in it, and all the events take place in Galilee. So, the chapter starts with Jesus going back to his hometown of Nazareth, and then we get one sentence, half a verse, which sums up probably several weeks when Jesus is teaching from village to village. Then Jesus sends out the 12 disciples on their first preaching mission, and then they report back to him in verse 30. So here we have that classic Mark sandwich where he splits the mission story in half and places another story in between. And the story sandwiched in between is that of Herod and the beheading of John the Baptist. Then comes Jesus feeding the 5,000, and that's immediately followed by Jesus walking on the water, and the chapter ends with Jesus healing lots of people in Gennesaret. I'll leave you to read the chapter for yourselves. We won't go into detail of everything. Mark, like the other three gospel writers, wrote his gospel to show his readers who Jesus is, to strengthen their faith so they can say, I know that I know. And so in addition to writing about the things that Jesus said and did, Mark does two other things to help show who Jesus is. And the first one is that Mark often tells us the responses of the people who see and hear Jesus. And it's a bit like if you've seen the movie Apollo 13, we feel anxious, even though we know there's a happy ending. Will the astronauts get back safely to Earth? Or will they be burnt up in re-entry? And we feel the tension because for 2 to 3 minutes, all we see on screen are close-up shots of people being anxious as they wait and wait. And likewise, in this gospel, we get people's responses to Jesus. We get their very human, natural responses to a very human Jesus as they try to figure out the something else about him. And this helps us also to confront and to confirm our beliefs about Jesus the man and Jesus the Son of God. And the second thing that Mark does is that he sometimes has an underlying current of meaning rather than stating something explicitly. And his original readers would have picked this up, but for us, it's easy to miss this extra layer of meaning. So this morning, I want to focus on the responses to Jesus, and we'll start with the responses of the people who knew Jesus best. So Mark has already shown us the response of Jesus' own family back in chapter 3. And remember, Mark wrote just one flowing narrative. There weren't chapters and verse numbers. They weren't added for another 1,000 years. So we read that Jesus' mother and brothers went to take charge of him because they thought he's out of his mind. So whatever Mary understood by the things that God told her about her baby 30 years earlier, this wasn't it. And now she felt that she needed to take control to protect her son from himself. And then, as I said, we have the reaction of the disciples back in chapter 4, after Jesus calmed the storm. Who is this? These 12, this inner core of disciples, knew Jesus well as their teacher, and they were very afraid. Now, I've always read it as if they were terrified of the storm, but Mark doesn't say that. Don't you like it, that there's always something new that you find out when you read scripture? So, although the disciples were in some danger, their attitude during the actual storm was more about being indignant at Jesus. He was sleeping, and so he wasn't sharing in their legitimate safety concerns. So what do? They wake him up and said, "Teacher, don't you care?" But it's after Jesus commanded the winds and waves to stop that they are terrified. Who is this? How can a man command the wind and the waves? And then in chapter 6, we get the response of the people in Jesus' hometown of Nazareth. Now, these people also know Jesus well, as Jesus is as Nazareth is a small village with just about 150, 200 people. And Jesus has lived there since he was a little boy. Now he's back as a teacher, a rabbi, with his disciples. And so in the synagogue, the people are amazed, they're mind blown, when they hear Jesus teaching with such wisdom. And they ask themselves, how has he gained all this wisdom? And how can he be doing the things that we hear that he's doing? And like the disciples, they don't have an answer. They're thinking, we know him. He's a carpenter, a manual laborer. So we know he hasn't been educated. We know that no rabbi has imparted wisdom to him. And they are offended at him. He's one of us. He's a local lad. He's Mary's son. So who does he think he is coming here like this? To their way of thinking, Jesus has overreached himself, and they take offense at him. So we can sum up that the people who knew Jesus best, they knew him as a man, as son, brother, carpenter, teacher, healer, miracle worker. And all this is true. None of them thought he was God. But why would they? One, there had never been a human who was also God. Two, a core belief of the Jewish faith was that God, there is one God. And three, as shown in the Old Testament scriptures, Jesus healing and performing miracles demonstrated that he was a man through whom God was working, not that he was God. So, why is it important that Mark in his gospel shows us this human Jesus? It's because Jesus being human is a central belief of our Christian faith. God became a human being. God became one of us. And to be human is to be born and to grow. And so the testimony of these people who knew Jesus best is important, even though they don't fully understand who Jesus is, because it is they who know the baby that was born, the boy growing up in the village with his family, the lad who becomes a carpenter, the man just starting out as a rabbi. So, next we have, from verse 6, we read that Jesus now expands his ministry by sending out the 12 disciples in pairs, and he gives them authority to do everything that he is doing. Would you have sent the disciples out at this early stage in their training? when they don't even understand who Jesus is. Sometimes God calls us to do something or take on a role that we feel completely unprepared for. We don't know enough, we don't have the adequate resources, we don't have all of the right skills. But God doesn't wait until we feel that we have it all together. God calls us when the time is right. Well, how did the disciples do? In verse 12 we read, the disciples went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and anointed many sick people with oil and healed them. Is that how you picture the 12 disciples? It's easy to skip over these short summary verses because they're not as exciting as an account of some dramatic event, like when the disciples later are unable to drive out an unclean spirit. But if we focus just on these dramatic stories, we start thinking that the disciples were completely incompetent, and that is just not true. Like us, they weren't perfect. Sometimes they failed or were slow to understand. But on this mission, they achieve everything Jesus wanted them to achieve. And in fact, this mission is such a success that Jesus' fame now spreads across Galilee. And to these people who didn't know Jesus previously, it seems like Jesus has just suddenly appeared on the scene. And so we get all sorts of fanciful rumors about him going around, and these reach Herod in his palace. And Mark tells us three responses to Jesus. Firstly, some Galileans think Jesus is John the Baptist, come back to life, that somehow John has come back from the place of the dead with new powers. And Herod, who had executed John, is one of those who believe this. However, clearly, Jesus was not John the Baptist, as Jesus and John were contemporaries. Other people think that Jesus is Elijah returned. And remember, Elijah was just taken straight up to heaven in the Old Testament. And thirdly, other people think that Jesus is a prophet, like those in the Old Testament scriptures. Now, Elijah and the prophet were two figures that many Jews thought would herald the coming of the Messiah. And Jews believe this Messiah, or Christ, meaning someone anointed by God to be priest or king, would restore Israel to its glory days. And then some Jews narrowed the focus of this hope down onto a Messiah who would be a military leader who would rid them of the Romans. So after listening to these three responses, we get this long, detailed flashback to Herod's feast and his beheading of John the Baptist. Now, Mark shows us three things by including this in this chapter. Firstly, as this comes in the middle of the mission of the disciples, it shows Mark's readers and us that following Jesus, being a disciple, comes with risk, even death. Secondly, John's death foreshadows Jesus' death. There's a lot of similarities between the events around John and Jesus' deaths. And thirdly, we get a picture of the leadership of Galilee that some Galileans were wanting to overthrow. Herod, who's actually a tetrarch, not a king, throws this pagan birthday party with the political, military, and business leaders of Galilee as his guests. Next, we move on to the feeding the 5,000, starting in verse 30. Now, this is the only miracle in Jesus' whole ministry that is in all four Gospels, so it is significant. Here, Mark shows us a fourth response to Jesus. However, this time, Mark doesn't state the people's response explicitly. Instead, he shows us the reaction indirectly by creating an underlying meaning. Now, most of us know the story. Jesus is teaching this large crowd in an isolated area. It's late in the day, and there's virtually no food. And then Jesus takes the 5 barley loaves and 2 dried or salted fish, and miraculously feeds the whole crowd. And the disciples distribute the food and collect the leftovers afterwards. And the event is often pictured like this. a happy family picnic on the grass. But this is not the story that Mark tells. By choosing his words carefully and by alluding to people and events in the Old Testament, Mark creates two interrelated images, two pictures. One is military and the other is of Moses in the wilderness, the great leader. By doing this, Mark shows his early readers that something else is going on. So let's go through the story and see what Mark is telling us beneath the surface. The story starts with the disciples being referred to as apostles. This is actually a rare term in the Gospels, and it means those sent out on an expedition. And when the disciples report back to Jesus after their mission, the word report is also a military term, which was used, for instance, for officers reporting back to their general. So because of Jesus' expanded ministry, people are seeing Jesus as a leader rather than just as a solo rabbi going around with his bunch of disciples. And here in this story, Mark pictures him as such, as a leader with men under his command. Next, the phrase, many people were coming and going. That's unusual, because we know people come to Jesus, but going? This suggests that something is happening behind the scenes, especially if the many people are young men. And it's these same many people who run on foot and get to the place ahead of Jesus and the disciples. The people run, which strongly suggests that they're not old people, and nor are they women and little children. Mark then emphasizes the setting, it's desolate and isolated, by repeating the Greek word eremos, which is translated here as a quiet place, a solitary place, a remote place. Eremos was the word for a desert or wilderness, and it conjures up both images, because the desolate places of Galilee were a stronghold of armed resistance against Rome, so you've got the military image, and also the wilderness brings to mind the Old Testament story of Moses and the Exodus. And then also bringing both these images to mind is when it says that Jesus, having compassion on the crowd, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, people without a leader. In the Old Testament, the phrase shepherd of the sheep was mainly used as an image for the leaders of Israel. Sometimes Moses, but more often it was military heroes like Joshua. You can read that in Numbers. And the story continues. So Jesus is a leader of men. We now see him directing the disciples like a general to have all the people sit down in groups of hundreds and fifties. And these numbers, the set numbers, probably allude again to Moses, how he organized the people of Israel into groups of thousands, 500s, and so on. But the word groups here actually translates two different words, the first meaning companies, and the second meaning ranks or rows, like garden plots. So if we could send up a drone over the scene, we would see all these men sitting but lined up in rows, like of in units, just rather like an army. So the key image of Moses is Jesus feeding the crowd with those five loaves and two fish, which is reminiscent of Moses in the wilderness when the Israelites are fed the bread or the manna from heaven and also quail. And the military image continues because the basket is a kophanos, which Jewish men carried, but it was also an item of equipment for the of Roman foot soldiers. They carried their rations in it. And then in verse 44, we get the number of men who had eaten was 5,000. This is nothing about overlooking any women who were present. These 5,000 men, as we've seen, are men of fighting age. So here we get a tally of the number of men available to fight in an armed revolt. And 5,000 is the same number of Galilean troops that Josephus will have under his command 30 years later during the Jewish uprising against Rome. So by the Moses imagery, Mark is showing Jesus to be a new Moses who leads and feeds his people. And Mark, through his use of military imagery, shows that Jesus had the opportunity and the means to lead an armed rebellion, to be the sort of Messiah that the people were expecting. But Jesus turned his back on that route. But the opportunity was there. And we read finally that Jesus compels, he made his disciples get into the boat and leave without him. Why? Did they have an urgent appointment somewhere? Or was Jesus keen to get them out of the way so that they would not be infected by the revolutionary fervor that's brewing? You might say, well, are we reading too much into this text? No. Mark was writing his gospel in the 50s or 60s AD in Rome when it would have been dangerous or at least very unhelpful to the Christian cause to have Jesus associated in any way with an armed revolt. But John, writing his gospel 20 years after Mark, can write explicitly in his chapter 6 that after the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is the prophet, that messianic figure, who is to come into the world. Jesus knew that they intended to come and make him king by force. Moving on. Immediately after feeding the 5,000, we have Jesus walking on the surface of the lake. The disciples again are once again in the fishing boat, but this time, although there's a strong wind, their lives are not in danger. And the disciples' response when they see Jesus walking on the water is to cry out in fear because they think they're seeing an apparition, a ghost. But Jesus identifies himself and then gets into the boat with them. That's the story. But this one is another that Mark writes with an underlying meaning. So after he says that Jesus went out to them walking on the water, which is incredible, Mark writes something rather strange. He says that Jesus was about to pass by them. Pass by? Was Jesus just taking a shortcut across the lake, which happened to just go past the disciples? No. Once again, Mark is alluding to the Old Testament because pass by was the word used for God appearing. In Exodus chapter 33, we read, and the Lord Yahweh said to Moses, when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. And Elijah has a similar experience recorded in 1 Kings, where the Lord Yahweh tells him the Lord is about to pass by. But of most significance here are the verses in Job chapter 9, which use exactly the same words as Mark, not just for the word pass by, but also for walking on the lake. Job says, God alone treads on the waves of the sea, and when he passes by, I cannot see him. Only God can tread on the sea. Only God could walk on the water. And so Jesus, by walking on the water, shows that he is God. He is the Lord, Yahweh. Except now, the God of the Old Testament, who nobody could see, even when his glory passed by, they were hidden, God is now visible in Jesus. We read, all the disciples saw him. At the end, the disciples are left amazed, knocked for six, is the word, which is an improvement on them being left terrified after Jesus calmed the storm. Now, Mark gives the reason for their amazement as their being that they had not understood the loaves of bread. So what hadn't they understood? They hadn't understood that Jesus, as the new Moses, wasn't just a second man Moses. The miracle with the loaves of bread shows that Jesus, the new Moses, is God. John once again states this more explicitly in his gospel. He has a long conversation that Jesus has at Capernaum with the crowd that had been at the miracle feeding. And Jesus said, "It is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. I am the bread of life. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever." To come down from heaven was to be divine. So there you have it, chapter 6. Here Mark presents Jesus as the man, the human being, and as God. And so the disciples' question, "Who is this?" has been answered. Jesus is God. But chapter 6 is only partway through the story. Jesus' disciples and his family don't yet realize this truth about Jesus. But, spoiler alert, they will soon come to believe. And, like the gospel writer and the early Christians, they will worship Jesus. This man they know so well, they'll worship him as God. They don't know the how. You know, how could a man be God and God be a human? But from all that they've experienced and heard and seen of Jesus, they know that this man is God. And they're so sure of this belief that several of the disciples will die for that belief. And Jesus' own brother, James, who becomes the leader of the church in Jerusalem, will also die a martyr. So how about you? What is your response to Jesus? To Jesus the man and to Jesus the Son of God? Do you know Jesus is God, the eternal Son, the living Lord? Does he dwell with you by his Spirit? Just like for the disciples, our journey to belief can take time. And our journey, belief journey, when we're on it, it can meander, it can hit roadblocks, but it can also deepen and become ever more precious. Today we understand God as Trinity, as the Father, the Eternal Son, and the Holy Spirit. But the how God could become a human being, ultimately remains a mystery. And this reminds me of an old song that I always like called "I Know Whom I Have Believed." And the verses are all about, "I don't know why, I don't know how, I don't know this, I don't know that." Whereas the chorus is, "But I know Jesus. I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded he is able to do all that he has promised. I'm convinced that he is all that he says he is." Do you know that you know that you know? And it's through experiencing God in our lives, Jesus in those places and spaces, together with knowing the richness of the testimony of those who knew Jesus on earth, which we read about in the Gospels, by these two things together, we can be sure of what we know. It's by these together that we can know Jesus in relationship and be fully convinced in heart and mind and spirit. So what is your response to Jesus today? Where are you at in your relationship with him?